Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 77. I've been pretty busy, as usual. I stay pretty busy. I enjoy fooling around with a lot of different stuff. I've been busy on Bugzilla. I'm still learning how to fix bugs. My latest little task has been to look in the maintainer wanted bugs, which is basically packages that has nobody taking care of them. And Gentoo is currently in the process of trying to get ready. It's going to be a long time in the future, but trying to get ready to enable Python 2 and Python 3 to work on the entire Gentoo portage tree, which involves a lot of different packages. Now, not all the packages, naturally, are Python-related, but there's a good chunk of them that are Python-related. Either they're straight Python programs, or they use Python in one way or another. And these programs need to be tested to see if they're compatible with Python 3. We know they're compatible with Python 2, or they wouldn't be in the tree already. So they just need to be tested with Python 3 and see if there's any way to get them to work with Python 3. So the lead guy of the Python in GNOME, is ARFREVER, and he's put together pretty nice e-classes for Python. It makes it pretty easy to work with for a novice like me. So he also put together a little how-to guide for Python with Gentoo developing. So I read through that, and I've got a pretty good understanding. And he's been real nice about answering questions on the Bugzilla and so forth. So I've been fooling around with that. If nothing else, it gets me a little more comfortable working with e-builds, and I've been submitting some patches for that. The other thing we've been doing is I'm currently a member of the Gentoo Foundation and on its board of trustees, one of the trustees of the Gentoo Foundation. And basically, the Gentoo Foundation is looks after the welfare of Gentoo. Provides fundings, tries to gather funding, and keeps, does the legal side of Gentoo so that the developers can spend their time doing the developing side of Gentoo. And we've been trying to go nonprofit. And in the course of going nonprofit, there's a lot of different accounting work that needs to be done. So we put together a little advertisement that went on the Gentoo front page for accounting people. And the response was real good. We got three or four responses. We got one guy currently working on putting together some information. And there's two people that I know of that are waiting for someone to give them some work to do. Would be nice to get these people involved since they were nice enough to volunteer. I can't really get them involved because I really don't know what's going on. There's a couple other people that are more knowledgeable in this area than I am. I'm basically on the board kind of as a novice, really. I don't really have any great experience doing anything, really, except for that I am a longtime Gentoo user, and also that I have been in the business world for many years as a superintendent on a golf course. So I do, a lot of buying and working with vendors, buying equipment, working with employees, working with management in a managerial position on a golf course. It's not like working at a big corporation. It's like kind of like a mom and pop operation, I would say. We probably have a total of 200 employees, and the actual amount that works with me that I'm responsible for varies between 15 and 50, depending on how much money's in the budget, or if we have like a major storm or something come through, then naturally we need more people to get more work done. We had a couple hurricanes come through, and we needed to get some temporary help. But generally speaking, my crew is between 15 and 30. So that has enabled me to get some experience in the business world. So the other thing that's come up to my attention is that we're going to need some help on is the documentation project within Gen2 is going to need a little help. Installing and using Gen2 is widely regarded as a complex task. One of Gen2's biggest strengths has been its documentation team. Gen2 provides documentation and tools to simplify the process and make it straightforward for all levels of users. Now, the Gen2 project could really use your help if you have any interest in doing documentation for Gen2. We can teach you how to do the formatting of the guide XML. If you have any experience with HTML, you can pick it up pretty easily. It's not that difficult. The main thing we need is people that can read, understand English very well, would enjoy doing documentation type work. This would be like people that are on the forums that like to do the documentation tips and tricks, people like that, people that enjoy working on the wiki, that would be very encouraged. So if you have any interest in helping out the Gen2 documentation project, please send an email to the docs team, docs-team@gen2.org, and just write a little note about you're interested and a little bit on your background, and someone will get back to you, and hopefully we can get you involved. Like I said, we really need your help. The documentation team has been slowly dwindling. There's one poor fellow, Nightmorph, that has pretty much been single-handedly doing the documentation. So really, we need a new team to start basically from scratch. So there's veteran documentation writers that will be able to assist you and help you learn your new trade. But we just really need people that want to be involved, that don't mind investing a little time, enjoy talking with other developers on IRC, and generally just to help out the Gen2 project. So, like I said, just send us an email and we'll get back with you. I've been moving along on my quest to become a full-fledged developer. I'm not done yet. My biggest drawback is that I don't really have the background as far as I went to school for computer science, etc. I'm not a C programmer or any kind of programmer, really. So a lot of this is I'm learning from the on-the-job training, as you say. I did kind of self-taught Python programmer. I wouldn't call myself a full-fledged Python programmer, but I understand the basics pretty good. I can create a program if need be. So that gives me a little bit of background. My Bash skills are very weak. I never really spent a lot of time actually doing Bash scripting. I've read a couple books. I've tried learning, and I know it better now than I did before, but definitely not a full-fledged Bash wizard by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm kind of enjoying learning as I'm going, just being on Bugzilla, talking to other developers, submitting my little patches and getting feedback, updated e-builds on the Perl experimental overlay, stuff like that. So slowly I'm learning, and I don't know if I would really be that much of an asset to the developer pool as a e-build maintainer, but probably would, because that way I could fix some of the easier e-builds and ones that I feel comfortable working on. And it's, you know, many hands do light work. You know, if one poor person has to try to do everything, it just gets overwhelming. So if you have a lot of different people doing a little, then, you know, it helps out. That's why I would prefer developers would not retire, even if they feel they're not doing that much for Gentoo, because you never know, in another 2 or 3 months, they may feel like doing some more work, or they may become interested, and then they're already a developer. Because the process of becoming a developer takes is a lot of work. And most people, if they go ahead and retire, they're not going to go through all that again to become a developer again. I mean, there's a few that have, but they're pretty much the hardcores. A normal person is just going to say, well, I'll help out a little bit, but I'm not going to become a full-fledged developer. So I would like to see, even if developers, you know, a lot of times they have a job that takes up a lot of their time, or their family takes up a lot of their time, or for the younger developers that maybe they're in their final years of college and they're having to do a lot of studying and they don't have a lot of time. And instead of retiring, if they could just hang on and maybe just do, what I would do is I would just do maybe a couple token commits just to make it seem like that you're actually doing something. You know, if you do a token commit once every 3 months when you don't really have too much time, then at least it looks like you're still active and you still want to be involved, and you can do that for a while. And then when you actually become more interested, or something perks your interest, or you just have more time, the kids have gotten older, or you graduated from college, or you've gotten a job that doesn't require as much stress and time, then you can invest a little more time in Gentoo and just go ahead and stay as a developer. That's what I would really like to see. It's a shame when we have these people that are very knowledgeable and can help out a lot, and they feel that they need to retire just because they're not as busy as they once were. Well, hey, we're all volunteers here. You don't have to put in 20 hours per week to be a value developer. A lot of times, just being there sometimes, if somebody has a simple, to you may seem like a simple question, but to someone like me, it's a very difficult question. And I have no idea. And you're like, well, yeah, you just do it this way. It's like, whoa, now that really helps me. But you only got that knowledge by being a Gentoo developer and having some time put in. And when you first started, you didn't know either, probably. So it's very valuable to just to hang on and not retire. So if there's anybody listening that is contemplating retiring, please re-contemplate just hanging around. And that would be very nice. What else? Oh, I got on this test box, I got a Compaz Fusion installed. I don't usually fool around with it, but this test box, I'm in the process of testing stuff. So I figured, well, I'll just see how Compaz Fusion is working. And it installed. I remember in the old days, you would have to, you have to jump through a bunch of hoops to go through the install stuff from the overlay and everything. Well, everything you need's in the Portage tree now, and it's unstable naturally, but I mean, the test box was unstable anyhow. So, I mean, it installed everything it needed right off the bat. I didn't have to do anything special. And I use GNOME as the desktop. It's running GNOME 2.3.0, that particular box. So the only thing I really needed to do was to run CCSM, because I had no window borders, and I didn't want Emerald, which is the fancy window border. I just wanted a nice GNOME window border, you know, GTK. Oh yeah, here it is. I just wanted GTK-window-decorator. I didn't want any fancy Emerald. So all I did was I started with Compaz Manager. And then I did GTK window decorator double dash replace. And then I still didn't have any window borders. So what I had to do is, like I said, I had to run CCSM, and to ensure that the checkbox next to window decorator is marked. And it wasn't. And it was as simple as just enabling a window decoration and then restarting everything, and it worked beautiful. So then I went in there and played around and tested it out. I went ahead and enabled for the 3D box and the Sky Dome and all the wild stuff, and everything worked beautifully. And then I went ahead and backed everything off. I just run it. I'm just running it basically just for the simple 3D effects, and it looks really nice, and it's worked fine. It hasn't crashed or anything, so that's pretty cool. My buddy Sylvain Alain, goes by the nick of D2 Racing. I've had him on the podcast a couple times. He's the fellow from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and he has this super powerful core quad. Yeah, with some kind of a highfalutin Nevada card on it. And this was his number one box, and the power supply did something bad and messed up his hard drive, the RAM, and I don't think it did anything to the processor, but I think he said the hard drive and the RAM had fried it. And he had not backed up his SSH keys or his GPG keys. So I had done it, but I just wanted to double check and make sure that I could find them where I put them, because as being a Gen 2 developer, you need that information. Otherwise, you're pretty much out of the water, and it's a real pain to resubmit, because we're doing everything over the internet, and nobody is really positive we are who we say we are. I mean, they've got a pretty good idea, but you're not absolutely 100% positive if somebody says they're so-and-so that, you know, they are. I mean, I've talked to enough people on IRC that I think I know for sure, but somebody could learn their mannerisms and the way they type out certain stuff and could probably impersonate someone. So it's real important to keep this information backed up and secure. And I have been using this GPG for a little while here lately, and it's pretty interesting. If you type in man GPG, it'll give you the pretty much the overview of everything that you need to know. It takes a little getting used to as far as importing keys, exporting keys, and going ahead and verifying keys. This is used mainly in email, but you can encrypt and just plain letters or anything, I'm pretty sure, with it. But I mainly use it for email. I can sign an email so that people can verify that the email actually came from me. If it's real sensitive information, then you can sign it and encrypt it. And then the person on the other end would see that it is signed by you, and then they can use their key to encrypt it. So that's could come in very handy, especially if you're ever working with any type of sensitive information. So that was good that I got a chance to double check to make sure that I had mine backed up. I try to, on a regular basis, back most of my important stuff up. And one time I was running an exact copy of this hard drive, I have two, and this is my work box here. I call it my work box. It's an Opperton dual core with a tie-in server motherboard. It's got, this particular box has 4 gig of RAM in it. And like I said, it has a, I usually still use Nevada cards. It has an older Nevada video card in it, but it works fine. But I had, at one point in time, I set up a copy of this 250 gigabyte Western Digital hard drive. I had another one, exactly same make, model, everything. and I had set up our sink to where it was our sinking at night and was keeping everything. So everything was being backed up on this other hard drive. And that was working for a long time. Then I was been fooling around with these, with the Gen 2 10 live DVD. And I don't burn them on DVDs. I actually download them to test them. And I put them on USB sticks. And like Woe has, before he was doing a lot, we were up to 10.2. The actual first release was 10.0. The next release was 10.1. But 10.2, if we ever get it released, is going to be awesome. It has it actually has a file system on it that you can emerge and install packages on the USB stick, which is pretty cool. I tried that. It works. If we ever get this done, it should be 10.2, or maybe it's going to be end up being 10.3 or whatever. But it's going to be really cool. We've done a lot of bug fixing as far as it boots up a lot faster. A lot of the old code was based on, if you remember when Gen 2 was had that installer, there was one point in time that Gen 2 was putting out an installer where it's actually a GUI installer where you would boot it up like a live, I think it was a live CD. I'm not sure if it was a DVD then. It might have been just a live CD. And it actually had an installer on it for Gen 2. Now, the Gen 2 install process is so complicated that, and you have so much different types of hardware that it's really hard for an installer on a Gen 2 source-based system. But they had it working, but it had some bugs, and I think it was mainly bugs on unusual hardware. Well, if you're going to have an installer, you got to make sure that it's works pretty solid, because you can imagine these Windows users, and they get this Gen 2 installed disk, and it wipes out Windows or something. They're going to be a little upset. So I remember one time I installed Fedora when I was first starting out with Linux and Fedora. I think it was Fedora 2. And I installed Fedora. And this is at the time when I was still using Windows. I never was over there, but I kept the Windows installed there. Well, something about this installer, it may have been Fedora 1, like a test, such and such and such and such. And something about the installer, it just grub just annihilated Windows, and nothing would boot. And I had no idea what to do. In fact, I think it messed up the hard drive somehow. Somehow it messed up the hard drive where the hard drive wasn't even registering. And I thought maybe it was just my hardware, but I searched around a little bit, and it had happened to other people too, so it wasn't just me. So anyhow, the installer, the Gen 2 installer, I guess it had some problems, so the project was abandoned, and they went back to the good old tried and true method of installing with a CD. Well, this DVD that Like Woe and the Gen 2 10 project has put together is not an installed DVD. What it is it's a DVD to showcase the latest packages within Gen 2. So you'll get the latest Xorg, you get the latest GNOME, you get the latest KDE, and so on and so forth. And it can also can show off some of the Gen 2 graphics as far as Gen 2 wallpapers, Gen 2 specific themes, stuff like that. Also, it makes a great rescue CD, because Like Woe puts a lot of tools and stuff on it. So it was pretty nice. So anyhow, I used these USB flash drives instead of the DVDs, because you burn these DVDs, you just be throwing them in the trash, especially if you're doing 10.2 revision 1, 10.2 revision 2. I mean, we've gone all the way up to 10.2 revision 9 and then start over again, 10.2 revision 1. So there's a lot of revisions in the process of testing, fixing bugs, searching out why this doesn't work or that doesn't work. So, but one time, when I plug in this USB flash drive, it shows up as SDC, because I've got SDA is my main drive, and SDB is that other Western Digital 250 gigabyte mirrored hard drive. Well, one time I plugged this USB disk in, and I used DD to copy the downloaded ISO onto this USB disk, and I went DDIF and used it as SDB, which was that. So what I did was I actually cleared that drive and put that ISO on that 250 gigabyte hard drive. So, oh boy. So I wiped that all off. So that hard drive's still sitting in here in this machine. Now I'm using it for backup, but I just manually back up stuff, you know. It's not running rsync or none of that. So I'll just, every so often, if I think about it, I'll back up like my SSH key. And I'll back up my GPG information. And I also keep it on a USB. I got a 2 gigabyte USB key that I put a lot of my important information on. Passwords is another thing you need to back up. D2 Racing can remember all his passwords. I can't. I make a file and encrypt it and put all my passwords on it. Because I got passwords for all kinds of different stuff. I got a lot of websites I have the passwords, but then just financial institutions and bill paying organizations and eBay and Amazon and Newegg and Tiger Direct. And the list goes on and on and on and on, passwords. I probably got 50 different sites that you never know, I might need to go back to, and I need the password. So I keep all that on the USB stick. And I also back all this up onto my laptop. I have an IBM laptop that I can actually use. If something happened to this desktop, the IBM laptop, I would be able to use it for development work. And I do sometimes, like I take that laptop if I go out of town and stuff. But I can use it for mail. It'll work. I can use it for SSH and all that. So it comes in handy. So poor D2 Racing had to go through the hoops to get his credentials restored, but I think he got most of it restored. What we did was, he had done a podcast with me way back. So we had a recording of his voice on doing this podcast. So what Robert 2 did suggested, and the other members of Infra suggested, was a way that they could verify that it was actually him, was to have him re-record some of the phrases that he used in that podcast. So they could do a check, a two-way check. One, they could check his actual voice just by listening, a human ear check. That checked out. Then they could use some tools to actually test the voice. As long as he's saying the exact same words or a phrase of words, they could test those two to see if it's the same person. So I think they did something like that, and they verified it was D2 Racing, which was Sylvain Alain, and then they set him back up with all of his credentials. So that was pretty cool. So I was able to help out there a little bit. He called me and we recorded our little conversation, and then I gave the link to Robert 2 and the other members of the Infra team for their testing and verification of his identity. I have been slacking, I'm going to be honest with you, on these podcasts. For some reason, I am more comfortable just doing e-build work or reading a book or chatting with people on IRC and doing some of the foundation work, answering emails, still learning Python and stuff like that. Pretty much just selfish stuff, I guess you would call it. And I haven't really been that interested in talking to other people about doing interviews and stuff like that. So I guess everybody's gets in ruts, and I'm in one of these ruts where I'm just not really that excited about interviewing people for whatever reason it is. I'm not exactly sure. I guess it might be too that I have asked a few people and I haven't heard anything back. So that will kind of kill your interest too. So maybe that's part of it. Don't want to deal with any rejection, you know. So I don't know. I haven't really been asking. I mean, I have a couple people that would be willing to do podcasts, but to be perfectly honest, I'm not really interested in what they may have to say. So now if I'm not interested in what they may have to say, I'm afraid that there's not going to be a lot of people out there listening that's going to be that interested in what they have to say. Not that there's that many people interested in what I have to say. So, but anyhow, I enjoy the podcast and I'm going to keep doing them. I'm just not going to be as worried about them being, I don't know, I guess you would say real professional or perfect or all that, because it just takes too much time and effort and worry and all that. I'm just going to do a podcast. If it comes out good, fine. If people enjoy it, fine. If not, I'll just keep doing the podcast. I mean, I don't want to embarrass myself. I mean, I'm going to edit it a little bit, but, it is what it is. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not a professional broadcaster. I'm not going to be a professional broadcaster. So you're stuck with Dave Abbott on Lennis Crazy Podcast. And this is about as good as it's going to get. So enjoy. If you have any questions or suggestions, or if you would like to get involved in the podcast, boy, I would sure love to have some help. Just email me at david@lennoxcrazy.com, because you may have some great suggestions, or you might have some stuff that you would love to do. I've got all the basics down now. I know how to do the podcast. I know how to do the recordings. I got an Asterisk server running. You can do conference calls. I mean, I got all the bases covered. It's just I need somebody to kind of help me out here, get my interest going again. So, again, email me at david@lennoxcrazy.com if you have any comments or suggestions. Check out IRC. You can go to the server is Freenode, and I'm on there all the time. I mean, I might not be at the keyboard at the particular time, but I'm there all the time. If you hang around, you'll catch me. But you always catch me at on Lennox Crazy. That's hash or the pound sign Lennox Crazy. Stop by and say hello. So I do really hope you enjoyed the podcast, and I'll keep them coming. No telling, next time something may really interest me, and I'll be really, really excited about it. So you never know. Things change. So I'll talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.